Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of our podcast, Is Breakfast Included? Today on the show, I sit down with Arthur Gonzalez. Arthur is a DJ, a photographer, a guitar player. You know what? Arthur kind of does everything. I had crossed paths with him on social media. We were both living in Texas. And coincidentally, we both ended up out here on the East Coast. He lives about an hour away. He drove up, he sat down with me and told me his story. I got to know a little bit more about him. And we kind of realized we both know the same people. It was a fun conversation and great getting to know him. And I'm sure we'll hang out again. He also told me his fascination with hash browns. If you want to hear that, let's check it out. All right, man. Tell me who you are.
My name is Arthur Gonzalez. Hi.
Where are you from, man?
I'm from Roswell, New Mexico, originally. Lived in Texas for about 20 years, and now I live outside of Philly.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, this is where we connected. We're here in New Jersey at my place. Yeah. You and I know a lot of the same people in Texas.
We know a lot of the same people.
You lived there for so long. I lived there all my life, and we're doing this here. We both migrated out east.
And it's funny because I had heard your name in the past, just in passing. Oh, I got to go talk to Bernie, blah, blah, blah. Oh, so-and-so aren't getting on the boat with Bernie. Oh, so-and-so's got to talk to Bernie for this. And at the time, this is years and years ago. I didn't know who you were.
Yeah.
And then I remember, oh, my God. I almost want to say it was Eli Young. Did you work with Eli Young?
I did. I didn't work with him. I used to cover for my friend Chief.
Okay. I remember someone mentioning your name with Eli Young. And I stopped one day, and this is out in, I'm going to say by El Paso, in that area. They were doing a gig out there. Yeah. And I stopped and went, wait, you know him? Like, it just turned into, I realized that whole circle is a lot smaller than I thought it was.
Well, I started with Pat Green.
Oh, okay.
So I met all those cats in the whole Texas, Texas scene, and I worked for Pat for 3 years. I worked for Jack Ingram for off and on for 3 years, you know, whenever he needed me, I'd come out there and I used to fill in for...
Yeah, in that area, those are some legendary names right there.
And I filled in for Eli Young whenever their guy would have to... couldn't make it.
Okay.
He and I were really good friends. And then I left that whole Texas thing.
Yeah, wow.
Left it.
Yeah, that whole Texas country scene, boy, they're pretty tight-knit, too. They don't let a lot of people in their little groups.
You know, it's funny. Some of them might be listening. Some of them might not. When I left, it's like none of them would talk to me anymore.
You left the mafia, man.
It's almost like I left the crowd. And it was just in the last several years. You know, I always kept in touch with Jack.
Yeah.
It is like its own little crowd, the whole Texas Red River thing.
They're a real tight-knit little group.
They are. It's not a bad thing.
No.
You know, it's kind of like...
I wish Hollywood was more like that. Hollywood will let anyone come in there and pretend to be famous. And I watched a lot of crash and burning going on from that.
Well, I remember... this is the first time you and I have actually met. I think we've only been social media friends.
Yeah, we've only been social media friends.
And I came across you, I remember... a band called Bon Jovi came to town.
And who's that?
My friend Takumi.
Oh yeah,
was
awesome guy.
Was the guitar tech, and he texted me and he's like, "You want to come down to the show?" And I was like, "I don't have tickets." He goes, "I got you, man." And I'm like, "It's too last minute. I can't make it." And then the next thing you know, within minutes, I was on Facebook and I saw pictures by Arthur Gonzalez, or you were taking pictures with my friend Russ Rojas. You had got them on stage to take pictures. And I thought, man, and then I started seeing your name. I was like, who is this guy? And he's like, got his hands in everything. And I had been meaning to contact you. It's very rare to meet people who have their hands in everything that aren't on the road all the time.
Yeah.
Like Grady's on the road all the time. These guys are on the road. Those were my friends from the road. And
Grady lived on the road at one point.
Yeah. He was here not long ago doing some Blondie stuff.
Oh, that's right.
He's doing the Pantera stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird about him is that whole group, like Grady and I'm gonna say the Pantera group, like uh-huh. all the people that hung out in that established group of people. I had hung out with them at individual times, never all at the same time. It's really weird.
Yeah.
But I never actually hung out with Grady. I saw him a few times in passing.
It's funny, he's the only one that I do know yeah. personally.
I saw him in passing a couple of times, but never hung out with him like some of the other guys I hung out with.
Yeah.
Like I met Daryl Dime. I met him 3 times mm-hmm. ever. Vinny, I met him multiple times, and every time I would meet him, it was always a party.
Yeah.
It was a party. And so he never remembered my name. He'd always just point at me and go, I know you. And I'm going to say that last year before he passed away, ran into him at a party. I think we were in Lubbock.
Yeah.
Might either have been Lubbock or it might have been Dallas.
Yeah.
I remember he looked at me and goes, hey, Artie. And I stopped and went, did you just call me Artie? And he went, yeah, man. And I went, you've never called me Artie. That's like what my friends that I grew up with call me.
Yeah.
He goes, well, ain't that your name, man? I was like, yeah. Like, and I remember I thought that was really cool because he had never, ever, he'd always just look at me, I know you, man.
Yeah. You know, I was just online earlier and those guys released a trailer for this tour, this Pantera thing. And no matter what anybody thinks about it, like, I saw that trailer and I'm like, dude, this is going to be amazing.
It's going to be a big tour.
To me, it's going to be a
huge tour.
It's going to be cool. All these cats that never got to see the songs live, they're going to see them live. And they're going to,
I've been back and forth mentally with it. I understand it's not the guys, but I understand it is the guys. So I'm just like, it's that same, I guess, because I've seen them like a handful of times.
Oh, yeah, man.
But I'm also thinking, you got 5 generations that are just going to go nuts to see them.
I tell people this story. I'll tell it right now. And it's going to be the first time I ever told it on this podcast. When we were in high school, Pantera were our, and this is with, Phil had just joined the band. So we were just hearing the records with Terry.
Yeah.
And then Phil joined the band and they put out Power Metal. And I remember just that. It was always blaring in somebody's car in the high school parking lots. And they would play at this place in DeSoto, Texas called Bear Creek Crossing. It was like a country club.
Yeah.
Like a private. I don't know if you know about Texas. Yeah. You used to have to be a member to go in some of these clubs. And they would play there and we would go see them.
They played several little country bars.
Yeah. They would put on their own shows. We went to see them several times. But the first time we went to see them, we were paying our money to go in, and the guy said, if the police show up, you're at a private party for, I can't remember the name, but it's for so-and-so. So if the police show up, and then they made us repeat it. What are you doing here? Oh. And so, because it was a private bar. You had to be a member. So we went in, and a band called Cat Daiquiri was opening up for them. Cat Daiquiri was Cat's band and Grady's band.
I didn't know that.
That was their band.
I never even knew the name
of the
band.
We didn't know at the time who they were, but Cat Daiquiri was opening up. And they came out.
I knew that there was a band, but I never knew the name of the band.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we were there. We were fucking teenagers, man. And Pantera were, like I said, our idols.
Yeah.
Because this was a band making their own records.
They before it was a thing.
So right before this, when we went to this show, they had just got their record deal. And I remember me and my friends were all fucking being fanboys. And we saw Phil and we cornered him. Like, dude, are you going to play this? Are you going to play this? Are you going to play this? And he's like, no, man. And we're like, are you going to play anything off the new album? And I remember these were his words. And for weeks, we just kept repeating them because we were stupid teenagers. He said, no, bro. But when the new album comes out, it's going to be like, boom. But I remember that night, they did play a little bit of Cemetery Gates.
Oh.
Just a little bit. Just a little snippet. And then they said, that's going to be on the album. But anyway, we saw them a few more times there. We'd see them at the basement. Then they were a basement band, and then we saw them at the City Limits.
I've even got video somewhere. But I got a duffel bag, so that's, I even have video with them at the basement.
Yeah, I got called out a few years ago when I posted something about Pantera, and somebody called me out saying, oh, you want to support those racist fucks? But dude, they, you know, like, if you didn't grow up in Dallas, if you didn't grow up in that DFW area,
dude, that was a melting. That was a melting pot of people, man.
Yeah, don't tell me about Pantera.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, everybody and their dog were friends with them. That's what they say. But we grew up with them. We saw them become the biggest fucking band in the world.
Oh, yeah. I was listening to them. I think my first album that I ever bought was I Am the Night.
Yeah.
That was, you know, that was when very first came out. I bought that. Then I went back and bought Projects and Metal Magic.
Yeah.
And that they were doing shows everywhere. I remember they did a, they even did a couple of little things out in New Mexico. Yeah. Just kind of hodgepodge things. And every time I would hear about them being somewhere, I could never go because I was a kid and my parents were like, no, you're not going to fucking go.
Yeah.
But when I moved to Arlington, and the first time I lived in Texas, it was 90. I moved there in 91, basically, because it turned 91 on the weekend I moved there.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting so many people who, like you said, everyone and their dog knew them. But at that time, it really was kind of true because you'd be at a party and these guys would show up.
Yeah, they were at
they were everywhere.
Local bars, they would check out local bands and they would help out local bands.
They were not afraid to come over and say hello. They were really cool guys.
I would never sit here and say like, oh, me and Dime were friends or me and Vinny. Because I really never, as much time as I spent around them, like I just, but the few times that I was around Daryl and in a place that in a very close proximity, he treated you like you were the only person in the room when you talked to him.
He was so cool.
So I always say, like, I can always speak for how I was treated by him.
Yeah.
I was a runner. I used to work at a club called the Galaxy Club, and I was a runner.
Galaxy.
Yeah. I was a runner for this guitar player. He's a famous guitar player. I don't want to drop his name. But Daryl and Zach came to his show that night because it was a guitar show in town and Zach was in there. And he came by and he slapped his address and he's I was working the door. And he said, give this to him. I want him to come by. I'm having a party at my place.
Yeah.
And then he ran back in. They left the club. And then he ran back in. He goes, nope, better yet, we're going to the clubhouse. Bring him there.
Oh, awesome.
I just gave it to his tour manager, and he goes, do you know where this place is? And I go, yeah. And he goes, well, you're driving us there. And so I got to go and be part of this thing. And that was, after that, we all went to Daryl's house. It was cool. It's something I really don't like to talk about because it was a personal moment for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There.
But I remember being there and him, the way he treated everybody in that house. And there wasn't many of us that were there that night. It wasn't like the normal big party. It wasn't many of us there. And he was treated us all like fucking kings, and it's not because we were with this guy, it's because that's who he was.
Yeah.
Like I said, that was my personal experience with him.
The few times I had ever been around him, that's how he was with me. He talked to you, not at you.
Exactly.
And he didn't care. He's just gonna be cool.
And being kids, like I said, that grew up in that area that saw them their fucking rise. With the one more Daryl story and then we'll move on.
Okay, yeah.
My friend Javier, he's one of my oldest, he's more like a brother to me. I remember he was trying to start a band and we were at a party that Daryl was there, and he was telling Daryl, like, I got this band and I want to call it Shift Face. And Daryl goes, man, that's badass. That if you really cool want name. A badass name, call it Shit Faced. And sure enough, several years later, he started this band. He called it Shitfaced. And then they eventually changed their name to something else, you know. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was, you know, it that's all, you know, he was that dude. Well, man, before we get any further, where are you from originally? You said New Mexico.
Yeah,
right?
Roswell, New Mexico.
Roswell, New Mexico. So you grew up with the aliens.
Yeah. You know, that wasn't even a thing when I was growing up.
Really? But you know what? It's not a thing to you, but one time I've been, well, the few times I've been to Roswell, everything. They sell everything.
It looks like Spencer's exploded in the, yeah, in the middle of the street now.
Everything's alien. Alien burgers, alien Walmart, alien Walmart.
It was not like that when I was growing up.
Was it?
No, it was. It was like a normal little town.
All right.
The Billy the Kid stuff was bigger than the alien stuff.
Really?
Yeah. People don't realize the Chisholm Ranch is out in Roswell.
Yeah.
You watch Young Guns 1 and 2, and they're all talking about the Chisholm Ranch and all that stuff. That was in Roswell. That was down the street from my parents' house.
Yeah. Well, because Netflix hasn't done a documentary about it. That's why nobody, that's why nobody cares.
the whole Billy the Kid thing was all in that area.
Yeah.
All the way from there through up on the outside of the Ruidoso area and Lincoln County. I mean, it was all like there. And somehow the alien thing overshadows the Billy the Kid stuff, which I grew up, you know, with the whole cowboys and Indians type of thing. So I always thought the Billy the Kid outlaw stuff was really, really cool.
Yeah.
The alien stuff, I was like, whatever.
I was a little bit into both, you know, like I've got a couple of books about Billy the Kid, but, you know, the UFO and that stuff really had me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with it.
Oh, dude.
You know.
Yeah. I think my senior year, pretty sure. Maybe it was my junior year. I don't know. Unsolved Mysteries came out there, and they did a segment on that alien crash and
the
whole nine yards. And so funny, some of my friends were in the Unsolved Mysteries thing. My friend Roy and I were like, well, we didn't get picked to be in that. Shit, let's get in our car, man, let's go. So we jumped in his car. In the middle of them shooting, we literally drove through right by where they were shooting, honking the horn and waving. And I remember that they didn't think it was too cool. The 50th anniversary of the UFO crash. I want to say that was like 93-ish in there.
Yeah.
And it was a who's who of rock stars, comedians, superstars.
Out there.
Yeah, because they were all scheduled to be at different things. There were comedians from Saturday Night Live out there. I mean, it was just all kinds of stuff. I got to jump on stage and perform on one of the MTV stages because a band didn't show up and the production manager was freaking out. And he's like, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't have a band. I need 45 minutes to fill the slot. And he looked at me and goes, do you know of a band? And I went, I could do that. And he went, what? And this is back before playing to tracks was a thing. I was doing little gigs out there and I would put my stuff on a CD and everything was recorded in the recording studio that I worked in, a music store that had a recording studio in it. And I would record my drum tracks and my bass lines, all my stuff in that studio. Then when I would go do my gigs, I would have all my stuff there. So I would play the guitar and sing live.
Play everything through the PA.
Yeah. So the guy's looking at me. He's like, okay, well, you'll be up after this guy. And I went, oh, shit. Here goes. It's real. So, yeah, I got to do that. Meanwhile, my metal band that I was in, that I was no longer in, were in the downtown area playing. And they had, well, I'm going to say a couple thousand people because we were on an open soccer field. They had a few hundred people crammed into an alleyway where there should not have been a couple hundred people crammed in there.
Yeah.
And they're on the stage and they got all the press because they moshed. They started a mosh pit that was so big they ran over the mayor. Which I still think it's funny as hell. But yeah, between all of that going on there, that was about the time the alien stuff just went out of control nuts. Everything
changed. Yeah, like I said, I think my first time going out there was 2007.
Yeah, everything was definitely alien by then.
Everything, everything was alien this.
Did they have the alien McDonald's by then?
Yeah, that's what it was. I said alien Walmart, but there is an alien Walmart. But the alien McDonald's, everything.
Now, see, it bothered me that they did that to that McDonald's. That McDonald's was the only McDonald's in America, the only one. They had glass, or I don't know if they were glass. I think it was plexiglass walls with every little toy from every Happy Meal ever in that place.
Really?
It was the only one in America that had that. So they had every Happy Meal toy in there. And they tore it down and made it look like a big UFO. And I'm like, why couldn't you get... Why? No, I was a kid and we would have killed to fight to get those little Happy Meal toys. And they just, I don't know, discarded them, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
So from my, just from my limited research of you.
Yeah.
You're a DJ.
Yeah.
You're a photographer. Mm-hmm. You're a videographer. They, I mean, how did you get into this business? Like, because you do it all. You do a little bit of everything.
I am.
Liaison, you know.
I started off by being a grunt at shows. In Roswell, at that music store, they had a live production thing. I was the guy who, go get this, go get that, carry this, bring those lights over here. Hey, roll that over here. No, don't touch that. Get away from the board. Yeah. I worked my way up to being the guy who started running small things. I learned how to use this mixing console. Then I learned how to run that lighting board. Then I learned how to program intelligent lighting. Next thing you know, I'm working the light, the lighting console for bigger shows. And as that would progress, the bigger the artist got on the rosters, I would make friends with not only the artist, but with the management. And I would use my contacts with them down the line with what I was doing when I was playing somewhere. Hey, do you guys have an opener? Cool. Well, if you need someone to fill in, and I would squeeze in.
Yeah.
So out of necessity, I couldn't find, on short notice, I couldn't find a bassist or a drummer or whatever. So that's how I started recording my parts and using them live. Because, you know, in those little areas, it's hard to find someone that can learn a whole set in one day or a week or whatever. Those kind of people didn't exist in those little towns. So when I would go do these shows, there'd be sometimes I would be doing production for a show like lighting or even sound. And I was on the bill to play. So I would have to have someone fill in for me to run whatever while I went and played. I got to play with everyone from Blue Oyster Cult. Did Rick Trevino one time. Like it was everything from like country to hard rock.
Yeah.
And I would make contacts with everybody all the way through it. And so I worked my way up to where now I was doing production, full production and promotion. So I got to work with famous comedians, people who weren't famous at the times, who became famous throughout the years. And I never lost their contacts. I always stayed connected to them, not because of the business itself, but because a lot of them were just cool people. So we became friends. And it would be funny. I'd run into people on the road, like various people from the rock or the music community. I don't want to say rock because everyone bounced from different genres.
Yeah.
But from the music community, I'd run into them while I was on the road doing the comedy stuff. When I was doing production for comedy, I was trying to get out of the music business.
Yeah.
No, you can't completely get away from it.
You learn eventually it's all just one big business,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the course of all of this, I would need, and keep in mind the internet was still a baby at the time, but I would make promos that I could post on MySpace. It's way back then. And I would make these little promos and I'd have my little digital camera. Like a little Kodak digital camera. This back when Kodak was still making digital cameras. And the video wasn't too bad. Back then, it probably would have looked good. And I learned how to make these little video edits with Windows thing. And I could make these little promos to promote a gig that we were going to do that night or whatever. And I would get these comedians to do these little promos. And they would be like, oh, that's really cool. Hey, do you do photography? And I'd lie. Yeah, I do. So I would shoot. I'd shoot various comedians. Sometimes I'd shoot bands. And
yeah.
I had to teach myself how to do that. I knew how to do a little bit of photography. And I had a little bit of photography equipment. But I didn't know pro level stuff like they were wanting. I just learned how to. I had a friend who taught me how to use Photoshop. So I can manipulate my pictures and they would be like, oh my God, these are amazing. And I'd be like, yeah, that's right. I did that. And so that got me further into the photography end as well. So now I'm branched into the live playing, into production and photography. The videography came along naturally with the photography because of those little promos I would shoot.
Yeah.
So I would teach myself how to do professional style video editing. And there's this little thing that came along around that time. It was a little baby. You might have heard of it, YouTube. Back then, there were no tutorials on anything. But people would post their little videos and stuff. And I would see every now and then I would catch a video where some guy would say, oh, I did all my editing on this. And I would look it up. I would find it. Then I would do all the research I could. Sometimes the companies would have their own little promos on their website or their tutorials. So I would learn how to use that stuff. And I just kept doing it until I got good at it. And now my video production, I don't know if it's top of the line, but I think I could easily compete with a lot of the people doing things out there. That also enabled me to work my way. All of these things enabled me to work my way into to the playing portions. Now, I met a guy. I don't want to say his name because he's no longer with us, but he played with everyone under the face of the sun at one point. Huge, huge musicians. He was in and out of some of the most iconic bands, but he was also a ghost guitar player. He kind of backdoored me into the ghost guitar playing world. I don't know if you know what.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, I was a guy that would be brought in when Joe Blow Rockstar over here couldn't play on whatever that they were recording. They would sneak me in. I'd play whatever. They'd hand me a stack of cash and get me the hell out of there before anyone knew what happened. And he made a living doing a lot of that. So now I think, you know, they can get away with it with just samples of their playing on keyboards. They can't. Yeah. They don't need a lot of people like me. So I did that for a few years, and I thought, oh, now I'm gonna get right to the big leagues. No, you also become the guy they don't want getting drunk at a party going,
yeah, I played that part.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not him. That's me. So I kind of had a double-edged sword there.
Yeah.
It allowed me to meet a lot of people, a lot of A-listers. I met a lot of A-listers. That was about the time I was like, okay, I need to get out of this part of the business. Well, trying to get out of that part of the business isn't that easy because some of these guys will, some of the producers who know that they had you on these things will talk bad about you if you're trying to
leave.
Yeah. If you've been in there for a while and you're just trying to go into this or into that, they'll make it known that, well, he's unreasonable. He's hard to manage. He's hard to work with. He's this or he's that. I heard all kinds of rumors about myself. A little group of them made it a point to make sure I would never do metal. And I went, okay, well, I know enough guys in the R&B world. I'll go do R&B. And I did. I recorded with some R&B artists. I met this producer named Mike Eastalone. Badass dude. He and I worked on this album for a while. I did a back-end deal with him. For those who don't know, a back-end deal is where you get paid on the back-end. You do all the work up front. And when you sell it, do whatever you're going to do with it, you get all your money then. Well, because I did it this way, he needed out of his contract with his production company because of whatever internal things were going on with them. Their agreement was he couldn't use the stuff he recorded under them, and they couldn't release anything he did under them. I was the last thing he just did. Spent a year almost with this guy. And we had like A-list R&B artists and rappers that were going to be on this. And I remember thinking, fuck. But it was a good learning experience. Yeah. I never got to do that before.
Yeah.
I also got to have, I would call prestigious people in the R&B community, hear my playing and go, damn, you're really good at that. I was on an airplane one time with Alex Davis, from Sly and the Family Stone. Yeah. And I was showing him a video clip of me playing. It was just me and Marvin Gaye's voice. And he looked at me and he's nodding his head. He's like, damn, dude, you got some soul. And I was thinking, oh, that came from Alex Davis. Like, to me, I was just like, mind blowing. So that's how I got to where I had my hands in all the different aspects of everything. Yeah. It's kind of weird, but it's how it worked out. And
yeah, man, sometimes it does work out that way. Like I said, I was a runner and I worked for...
People don't know how much work runners do.
I was a runner and I worked for Pat Green. His TM asked me at the end of the night, like, the magic question, and I jumped at it. But, you know, you to get your hands in all that, you can't say no to anything.
No. And one thing also, a lot of people don't understand, because I'll get people going, oh, hook me up. You can't just hook someone up. Nah. It's who, not only who you know, but if you vouch for someone, it's like the mafia. You vouch for someone and they mess it up, they mess it up for you.
Yeah. There's very few people I put my name on.
Yeah.
My friend, I don't know if you know Mike Warren. He's a guitar tech out of Dallas.
I know that name. I do know that name.
You know, when I...
Do you work with Andy Timmons?
No, he's worked with... In This Moment.
That's probably where I know him from.
Then. He's with Breaking Benjamin.
I've shot In This Moment several times, so that's probably where I know his name. So
he worked with them, but he's one of the top guys in the industry now. And I knew back then he actually took my gig in Pat.
Oh, okay.
So he, you know, when I moved on. And so he was such a, as far as tech, being a guitar tech or whatever we do, he's up here and I'm down here. Like that's because his brain is made.
I don't know, man. You've worked with some pretty monstrous
musicians. I always say I'm a good hang.
I don't know, man. Like, okay. You have literally crushed it with some of the biggest names on the planet. I'm going to say you're up there with him, man, because you're no slouch, man. You cannot. And I know from being around A-listers, everyone likes things done a certain way. And if you... I want my guitar tuned this way, and I want that to be this way. Oh, and can you drop that one string that much? If you don't do it exactly like that, you'll hear about it.
Yeah.
And
I try not to work for those cats. No. I do my best. I do my best to stray from those guys. But yeah, you're right, man. Like you can't. Now it's not only keeping your good name by doing your job well.
Yeah.
It's. You know, in my first few years of touring, I got it because I was naive and green.
Yeah.
People would say, oh, can you hook me up? How do you get on the road?
Oh, yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, give me your number.
I did that.
Whatever. Just trying to, because I did that. I'd like to think of myself as like,
you know, you want
to
be the cool guy.
And then you realize like, well, a lot of people don't realize in this business, man, that it's everything. It overtakes everything. This is your life.
Oh yeah,
you can have a family. You can have friends. You're not going to see them.
I had an apartment. I could tell you I had an apartment, but a lot of times I never saw it.
Yeah.
My brother, who lived an apartment building away from me, was at my place more than I was at one point because I was always on gigs, on gigs or doing the little regional tours or whatever. I was always gone. So yeah, I had an apartment. I just didn't see it that often. Yeah.
And then there's cats that hate that part of this business, but they still do it because of the money.
Yeah.
But I love this business.
Man, I used to want to get out of it, but when I got sucked back into it, I'm like, no, I can't leave this. I love it.
Had I known when I was 20 I could do this, and had I known that, you know, at 19, 20, everybody had aspirations of being a rock star.
Yeah.
I played in the band. I did all that. But as I got older and as I was in bands, I found myself handling the booking, getting the gear here, and I enjoyed that.
Oh,
I
really did enjoy a lot of the road managing stuff. Huh?
I did enjoy that part of it. So this is really right up my alley. But had I known back then that all I had to do was get out of that little shit town I was in.
Yeah.
And connect with people who were doing it.
Yep.
I might have fast-tracked my way to this business. But I might have fallen into some bad things, you know.
Man,
I find it fortunate. I was in my 30s before I started doing this.
I had all kinds of crazy things happen when I was trying not to do it.
Yeah.
I would do, I took a hotel gig one time. Had it for a few years. I didn't realize a lot of the people on tour were staying at this hotel. One night I had Casey and the Sunshine Band up on stage with me. Like, I mean, it was just every time I was trying not to do things with the music business, something would happen and I would be right back in the music business.
Yeah, exactly, man. It happens like that. So, but my reasoning, I say there's so many people out of work.
Yeah.
And there's so many people that do jobs that they just fucking dread.
Yeah.
Like I get to just.
God dang
it. I mean, there's a lot that goes into the gig, but I get to tune basses for a living. Or tune
how many times do you get to watch an artist you love playing your favorite songs and getting to jam out to them? Because a lot of people would kill for that. And you're like.
Even watching an artist you don't love is better than working a fucking 9-to-5 you hate. You know, like.
Yeah.
I've worked for artists that I don't particularly care about their music. But in the end, you become a, like, I wasn't a big DD fan when I first, I say that, but I liked all their songs.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I get very defensive if people talk shit on DD.
I wasn't, until probably the White Album, the Wedding Album. Then I started listening. I'm like, ooh, wait. And that's part of what, on Pete Thorne's, live stream last week, that came up and he mentioned that as well.
Yeah.
He wasn't a big fan because a lot of us were metalheads back then. It was like that kind of music was always associated with the wimpier guy.
Yeah,
it wasn't the metalhead. But I knew, like down the line, down the years, like I would hear this metal dude going, "Dude, Duran Duran's badass." What? Listen to the bass line on Rio, or listen to this, or listen to the guitar part. And I started listening, and I remember I used to be the closet Duran Duran guy, like, oh, I like that song, but I can't tell anybody. Well, I still love him, Simply Red. And I remember finding out that Daryl loves Simply Red. And I'm like, is it cool to like Simply Red now? I mean, if Daryl likes him, I guess I can like him. Like, and then it just became, it didn't matter what you liked as long as it was good music. And that's about where I'm at now. If it's good, that's all that matters. And I love Duran Duran now. Like, yeah. I'll hear, Hungry Like the Wolf, and I think, man, that drum pattern in the middle break, man, who came up with that? That's so killer. And like, I mean, I'll hear things like that, or I'll hear guitar phrasing that you don't hear in metal with them. And I'm going, that reminds me of like punk stuff. And then I found out that they came from a punk world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, now my whole thoughts of them, they were like the Police. I hated the Police. Then I found out they came from a punk world. And then I would hear the elements of punk in their playing, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Now I got
that whole reggae drum.
Yeah.
Going, you know?
Yeah. So now it's like.
Reggae punk.
Reggae punk. So I would hear things from these bands now that I didn't listen for in the past because my mind was pretty closed. And it was just metal. I didn't realize that all of these bands came from a lot of the same roots that the metal guys came from. Yeah. So. My whole outlook on it now is just...
I always say it either came from Elvis, the Beatles, Zeppelin, or Kiss.
Yep.
You know, like, it came from one of those. Like, depending on your age. I'm going to
throw Judas Priest in that mix, too.
Well, yeah. No, of course, Priest and May, like...
That whole core era.
But, you know, like, depending on your age, you either saw Elvis.
Yeah.
Or you saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, or you've heard... I always say, like... When you put Led Zeppelin 1 on the turntable, the first thing you hear is that fucking Good Times Bad. That's the first thing anyone ever heard of Led Zeppelin. Like, how can that be denied?
Wow.
You know, or Kiss, you know, like, I think I've heard Kiss being referred to as the gateway band.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was Kiss.
For me, it was Kiss, too.
For me, it was Kiss. And then after Kiss, you know, Kiss was... like superheroes.
Yeah.
But after Kiss, then you know, that whole 80s thing. The first album I ever bought was Donna Summer. You know? And then it was later in my, like, 6th, 7th grade, I was introduced to, like, Quiet Riot and then Motley Crue.
Yeah. I was in 6th, 7th grade when my buddy down the street came over with a Quiet Riot cassette one day, and he's like, you got to listen to this. And I remember right when I first heard it, I went, whoa.
Yeah.
And... That was a whole new world then.
Yeah. I grew up with sisters, and so they I like I said, the first album I ever bought with my own money was Hot Stuff by Donna Summer. I think it was the big single. Hey,
wasn't Donna Summer on Casablanca with Kiss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Casablanca.
Yeah, they were label mates.
And so, I mean, but, you know, I love everything. Early in my years, I was into, like, stuff like that, the Commodores. And
dude,
'80s or '90s of R&B. But then I was also a fucking metalhead, you know? And
same here. Dude, I played with Ollie Woodson from The Temptations. Mm. Actually, wow, that's so weird to say that. But he ended up with cancer and passed away. At one point, we were going to put a group together. And he wanted me to get some people together. We talked about it. Then he just kind of vanished. And with the couple of times that we had really talked about it, he told me I was his badass guitar player, and I needed to find other musicians like that. And so I let him hear Little Caesar. I don't know if you've ever worked with them or. Well,
I had that cassette.
Okay, well, he heard Ron Young's voice, and the first thing he said was, "Do you know this guy?" And I went, "I don't, but I know how to get a hold of him." He's like, "Get a hold of him." So I got a hold of Ron way back then, dude. Yeah. That's so weird. I don't think I've never actually publicly told this story, but yeah, I got a hold of Ron way back then, and Ron was all about doing whatever with him. Like he's like, "Wait, who? What? Damn right, I want to work with him." And I was like, "Okay." I asked him who else he wanted me to get a hold of, and he's like, "Well, just hold on here. We're gonna wait a little bit." I think he knew he had cancer. He just didn't know.
Yeah.
And then he kind of vanished on me. Found out later he was in the hospital, and then he didn't have much longer. So, but he was when he heard like Ron singing, and first thing he said was, "I need that guy in my group," like. He didn't care. He told me one time, he's like, "Close your eyes. What color do you hear?" And I went, "What?" He's like, "That's right. It's either good or it's bad. There's no color." And I went, "Oh."
Yeah.
And that started changing my mind about music. Like, so a lot of these big metal bands were always into all these other things.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. You find out now, like, who's into what, you know?
But back then it wasn't cool. You couldn't talk about it. Couldn't say it because it was like almost taboo.
Yeah. Well, it's a different time, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't change it now because I wouldn't have all the knowledge I have.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have made the friends I made in the industry.
Yeah. Well, man, thanks for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was awesome, man.
Yeah.
Way killer, man.
Yeah. You know, the podcast, it's called Is Breakfast Included? And if it was included, what would you have, Arthur?
Well, first of all, I'm a sucker for hash browns. I got to have hash browns in there. Actually, it wouldn't matter as long as hash browns were involved. As long as I got hash browns, I could live on hash browns.
Who's your favorite hash browns? Oh, now, if you didn't just immediately answer Waffle House, I don't know if I can call you a true Texan, bro.
Well, I'm not from Texas, so I can get away with that one.
Well, Waffle House is in Roswell, too.
Is it? Really?
What's in New Mexico?
I was going to say, I don't remember one being in Roswell. Actually, I don't think I ever had hash browns at Waffle House. I always had pancakes. All my Waffle House experiences were really drunk, so I don't remember any hash browns.
Okay.
This is back in the 90s, man, where we Waffle House, let's go to Waffle House. And we'd go and inhale whatever we had on our plate.
Well, if you ever see a Waffle House, they have the best hash browns. Okay. Scattered and covered is what I get.
I would definitely do the hash browns when I'm at a Waffle House next time then so I can confirm this.
All right, man. Well, dude, thanks again.
Oh, thank you, man. This was awesome. You're in my first official podcast.
All right, brother.
I mean, I've done magazine interviews and I've been in different magazines, and I've done things like that. I've been in videos that ended up on other people's stuff, but I've never done a podcast, so this is really cool.
Well, here you go, man.
Right on, man.
Thanks a lot, brother.
Thank you, brother, man.
Right on. Arthur Gonzalez. You can find him online on his Instagram, officially Arthur Gonzalez IG, all one word. It was a lot of fun getting to know Arthur. I'm sure we're going to hang out again. Check him out.
it's kind of weird. Like, I'd reached out to him not knowing he was out here, and we're literally right up the road from each other, so I'm sure we'll hang out again. Anyway, guys, I am done. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.